Hello and welcome to Virago Voices Podcast. This is episode 3 of series 3 of the Self-Care is Healthcare series. If you had listened to episode 2, I really hope you enjoyed it. This series is all about health self-care. Not your baths, candles and face masks, as lovely as they are, but we are talking about how you can look after your own health and well-being. So I have had a busy week this week. We, at the start of the week, held a book club discussing The Flat Chair with a few of my friends. If you haven't read The Flat Chair, it's amazing and a really easy read, and I definitely recommend it. It's a really good book. And then later in the week, a team that I've been working on for the last couple of years around FGM, female genital mutilation, released our very first online course all about educating healthcare professionals, social workers and teachers and police officers all about female genital mutilation. I've shared a little bit about it on my Instagram, but I will do a post sometime next week all about the course itself and a bit about FGM or female genital mutilation. So yeah, and then to top off my crazy busy week, I got COVID, hence why my voice sounds a bit different here. I tested positive. I've had a bit of a mild cold. But yeah, I've got a bit of a husky voice, so if I sound different to what I normally sound like, that's why. So I hope all of your weeks have gone well and haven't ended with a COVID positive result. I loved hearing your feedback from episode 2. As always, I love hearing feedback and I love when people message me about the podcast. Ree from Oxford stated that she loved hearing about Helen and her craftivism campaign, and she thought that Helen was really cool. So thanks for that, Ree. As you know, you can always drop me a message, leave me any comments, any feedback, and even any improvements that you may have. I love hearing from you, and I love hearing your thoughts in the podcast. Sometimes I feel like I'm talking to a void when I talk into this microphone. So it's nice to hear some feedback. So let's talk about this week's guest. Our special guest for episode 3, Don't Forget the Vulva, is the amazing Tash Crosby. Tash is the founder of Talk Peach Gynecological Foundation, which raises awareness around the 5 types of gynecological cancers. Tash aims to smash taboos surrounding gynae cancers so people are better placed to advocate for themselves. Tash also advocates for funding into research, clear pathways to testing for medicines and clinical trials, and gives support to those who are diagnosed with any of the 5 gynecological cancers. I'm not going to go into too much into what Talk Peach is, as Tash describes it so much better and more eloquently than I do in the podcast itself, but I'll just say that she is such an amazing, inspiring woman. I met Tash via Instagram and was so inspired by the work that she was doing, I knew that I had to have her on the podcast. In this episode, we will cover what the vulva actually is, why checking your vulva is so important, and how to check your vulva, with Tash giving us a really clear overview of what you need to look for. Tash will then talk about her own personal journey and Talk Peach, which is super inspiring. I'm so excited for you all to hear it. As I've mentioned on my Instagram, I've tried to make this series a bit of a hybrid between the health education and also spotlighting inspiring women and talking about the work that they are doing. I hope that comes across in the podcast, and let me know if it does or doesn't. I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts. So let's begin. I hope you enjoy episode 3 of the Self-Care is Healthcare series. Don't forget the vulva. Hi Tash, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm so excited that you're on the podcast. It's so exciting to actually meet you in person. I've been following you on Twitter or on Instagram for a while.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. Meeting across the world, you know.
For context, from Tasha's accent, she's in New Zealand at the minute and I'm in the UK. So we're on a 13-hour different time zone. So at the minute it's 6 a.m. and it's 7 a.m. for you, is that right, Tash?
It is, yeah. Just after 7. Yeah.
Nice. And yeah, you were just telling me about the weather. It's like 25 degrees.
It is. It's stinking hot over here. So humid, but not complaining.
Yeah, we're all very jealous. So 25 degrees. So today we're going to talk about the vulva and actually what it is and how to check it. Let's just get straight in. Should we talk about the vulva itself and what it is?
I guess I could talk about, you know, a few misconceptions and I guess just some kind of interesting facts about the vulva. I suppose the first kind of thing to talk about, I guess, is that the vulva is not your vagina. And that seems to be one of the most common misconceptions, is that people, when they are talking about their vulva, they'll call it their vagina, which I definitely know I did at school. I just thought that whole area there was just the vagina. Yeah. But in fact, the vagina is about a 3 to 6 inch long muscular kind of canal, and that goes from the cervix, which is basically the lower part of your uterus, down to the outside of the body. And so the vulva is everything that's on the outside of that. So your clitoris, your labia majora, which are the bigger lips, your labia minora, and the actual opening of the vagina is considered part of the vulva as well.
I guess it
can seem like splitting hairs, but I guess continued sort of misconceptions about reproductive health sort of really just perpetuate the misunderstanding of that area. And it's an area really that has for years and years been under sort of research and I guess stigmatized. So it's quite, I think you should feel proud to know what it is and actually start calling what you have been calling the vagina the vulva.
Definitely. I absolutely love that. I'm so pedantic. Well, people call me pedantic, but I'm like, it's so important. Like, it's not your vagina.
It is really important. And I mean, it's empowering to know your anatomy and be knowing that you're calling it right, what it is. And I think, you know, if you start calling it the right words, it's modeling it to the younger generations as well to call it the right thing. And yeah, I mean, it can come in handy when you know you are describing something on your body, perhaps if you are visiting your doctor or fooling around with like a partner or something, to know what it is called. And and pass that knowledge on, I always say as well.
I actually really agree with that. Knowing exactly where things are on your body, especially from a doctor perspective, like, you know, people come and they'll kind of be awkward about it because they don't know what to call their vulva or their vagina, because it's always been like such a dirty word. So, oh, you know, down there, my legs, and you like just say what it is that you're describing, and it's really not dirty at all. It's empowering, as you said.
Yeah, and I also sometimes wonder, I mean, why has it always been called the vagina? Like, when we have known that part is called the vulva, and it's like, I guess, you know, the vulva, a part of the vulva is the clitoris. Like, you know, it would make sense that, you know, it's just been kind of looked over. And no, that's just the vagina.
Yeah.
That whole thing's the vagina.
Yeah, it is like, the clitoris is honestly one of those terms that, like, people just don't use or talk about it. And it's like the secret in the whole women's body is like the clitoris. We don't talk about it, we don't touch it, we don't do anything.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty crazy as well, because I mean, it's funny because it does seem, I suppose, for years, you know, even up for me, actually, only up until probably even like 2 years ago, I thought the clitoris was just the tiny sort of P-shaped part of the anatomy within the vulva.
Mm.
But recently, well, not recently, actually, it was some French scientists who they made this massive 3D model of a vulva in 2009. And I guess that was kind of the first, I mean, I didn't see it when that was done, but I guess publicly wise, that was kind of the first time that people had actually seen, you know, the actual shape of what the clitoris is. And it is quite surprising. It's actually, lo and behold, not this little tiny P-shaped thing, but it does actually go up internally into the body, and it's more like, I guess a wishbone, a wishbone kind of shape. And I think it gets to about 10 to 12, it can be 10, or maybe it's centimetres, sorry, about 10 centimetres in size. So it's not actually small, it's quite big. And it actually grows when you're aroused as well. So it kind of operates like a penis, really. Like I actually read recently that, you know, when you are in the womb, both sexes actually start off with the same kind of anatomy, and then it kind of, I think it's called the ridge something. Hang on, I actually did write a note on that, and I'm going to find it because I don't want to, when I'm with a doctor, say the wrong thing. Did I write a note on it? No, I didn't even write a note on it. But so it's 10 centimeters tip to tip, and and it's just, I guess, a lot larger than what I even knew it to be when I just thought it was this tiny little peva thing. So
yeah,
which is crazy, you know. It's like, I mean, how I got through my whole life not really knowing that. And I mean, let's face it, it's a really, really important part of the anatomy for half of us, half of the world. And it does actually, I heard, like, it's actually got 8,000 nerve endings, and I know the penis has 4,000 nerve endings, so it's like double the amount of sensitivity in that, which what I used to think was a tiny little thing, but actually quite a large thing, and hard to miss when you see actually some sort of visuals of it. Yeah.
And do you not think, because I read that same I think I only read it like last year, about the French scientists, their work, and that was only carried out in 2009. Like, they only thought about researching the anatomy of the clitoris in 2009. I just can't get my head around that.
I think they had researched it already. It had been researched, but it was kind of the first time that anyone had really sort of made this model. So in terms of public knowledge, you know, and because the general public don't usually go, oh, I'm just going to go read this research paper that someone did bloody 50 years ago. But, you know, that was the first time that really everyone was like, oh, whoa, because it kind of made headlines, you know, because there was actually like a big visual, 3D visual that people could actually see. And it was the first, main foray into the public eye of what the clitoris actually was and the size of it. You know, hats off to the Frenchies for doing that. I mean, apparently they are good lovers, or is that the Italian? I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. Both. Yeah, so I definitely agree with you. I'm so true. The vulva, knowing your correct anatomy is really important, and it's empowering. And yeah, the clitoris, we just don't discuss.
It's quite a nice word.
Yeah, it is. It's a lovely word. It's
fun to say.
And I guess then to lead on from that, we're talking about self-checking and self-care. So
yeah.
Do you kind of have any advice on how to check your vulva?
Yeah, I guess first off, all vulvas look different.
Yeah.
And you know, no two are exactly the same. The size, the shape, the color, they can vary like considerably from person to person. And you know, I guess we see in a lot of mainstream, you know, perhaps pornography and things like that, that vulvas look a certain way. And yeah, I kind of think that leads to a lot of people maybe freaking out about whether their vulva is normal or not. But it's good to know that, you know, the labia minora or majora can be, or especially the minora, can be all sorts of different sizes, and that it's completely normal. I mean, for, I know that there's sort of a lot of people who are now going, opting for cosmetic surgery, and that it's actually on the rise, cosmetic surgery of the vulva. And, you know, as well as I believe that everyone has the right to do what they want to their own body, you know, that I think people should recognize that it's fine for yours to be different than what someone in a porno's is. But there are people that do have sort of labia minora that are quite long and perhaps cause friction or are annoying or painful at times when they're doing maybe like going to the gym, et cetera. And for those people, you know, they opt to have the surgery. But yeah, I think, you know, if anything's worrying you about it, speak to a medical professional, but also know that you will definitely not be alone in that yours looks different, and celebrate being different. Diversity is good.
Yeah, definitely. And also a lot of the terminology, so labia minora, majora, there's a lot of movement now in the medical community to change that to just inner and outer, because
okay,
often your labia minora can actually be longer than your labia majora.
And yeah,
that's like, you know, women will look and be like, oh gosh, you know, I'm abnormal, I need to sort that out. But it's not, it's very normal, and unless it's giving you bother, as you said, all vulvas are different, and that's what's so beautiful about them.
Yeah, and it's so important to be talking. I know that this lady that who I used to work with, and she was talking to me about her daughter was like really upset and thought that she was like needed surgery, and you know, she was just a young teen, she's only 13, but she was like really upset thinking that something was wrong with her, when really it was totally, you know, it was totally actually normal. And so I was like, get her on to go on Instagram. There's so many amazing sort of accounts now that are all celebrating the vulva, and quite often showing like really amazing detailed illustrations of different vulvas. And yeah, there's one account I follow. What is her name? The Vulva Gallery. And she's done this amazing book of all real people who have actually sent her photos of their vulvas, and she's illustrated them all in this massive book. And there's everything you can imagine, you know, like, and I was like, get her to check out this account, because yeah, I think she'll see that they come in all different little packages.
Oh my gosh, that I'm literally going to follow that now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's about Vulva Gallery. Yeah, she's amazing. She's got so many followers, and she sells like really cool stuff, like sex education kits and like all this really cool stuff. She's got an amazing account. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just stuff that we should be talking about, like the fact that you know, young girls and boys, the first time they'll see a vulva might be in pornography, as you say.
Yeah,
and to say that, you know, that's not what they look like, that's very
real life.
Yeah, not real life at all in many respects.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's empowering. Education is power. And you've already got enough to worry about when you're a teen, like if you could just get rid of that one worry about your body, then yeah.
And I definitely think the power of mainstream media and showing, you know, pictures of vulvas, or one that I love, because I had so many incidents in school where, you know, when you've like had a really heavy period and you've leaked.
Yeah.
And there's so many pictures at the minute on Instagram of like people who have leaked through their pad or through their pants. And when I was a child, like if I had seen that, I'd have been like, oh my gosh, it's so normal. Whereas I remember it happening to me and being like, oh my gosh, I'm disgusting, this is awful.
Yeah, it was like the worst nightmare.
Yeah, it was. Especially when you had like white shorts or something on.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard of now as well, like a friend of mine, her son, like his friend, a girl at school, he noticed that she had blue through, and he gave her her jumper. He rushed over and gave her his jumper. You know, it was just like, oh my god, back in my day, like the boys, and not through their own fault, it's basically just education, you know, would have just been like, wouldn't have a clue what to do, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely
it's so important, isn't it, just talking openly. And it's just so normal, you know. But I'm finding it really inspiring that there, as everyone seems to, the conversation seems to have started, and things are becoming less taboo. And I mean, when things become less taboo, it does amazing things for good mental health. And also health in general, you know, knowing about your body is key to, for some instances, early diagnosis of all sorts of things, which I guess would lead me into my next chat about checking the vulva. And yeah, I guess with checking the vulva, like, there are certain things that we know how to check. Like, we know we should be checking our breasts for lumps. And I'm not sure what it's like in the UK, but over in New Zealand, it's the education for that is so brilliant, and that there's posters everywhere. You go to changing rooms, there's posters. You go to public toilets, there's posters on how to do breast checks and things like that. Like, it's so they've shared that knowledge so well that I feel like so many people now know how to do it and feel confident doing it. And I even remember, I mean, talking about breasts used to be taboo, and now we talk about breasts openly. And the fact that we are has probably saved so many women a late stage breast cancer diagnosis, you know, the fact that they've been checking for lumps, or felt the urgency to go and get their mammogram, et cetera. I guess at Talk Peach, and something that we often talk about and we definitely do encourage, is to check your vulva. I recently lost a good university friend of mine actually to vulval cancer, so it is definitely kind of something that I wouldn't say dear to my heart, but I'm passionate about educating others on. She was diagnosed, and she passed away just over a year later after discovering, well, she discovered a lump and then didn't do anything about it. And then by the time she kind of got the courage to do something, it was quite far spread. Okay. So very important to check your vulva. And I guess it's a much lesser known exam, and it can be something. The good thing about it is, like a breast check, you can just do it yourself. You don't need to go to a doctor to get a vulval check. And the importance of it is just like checking your breasts, you know, to see if there is any abnormalities, or, you know, any changes that would warrant you going to your doctor. And I would encourage everyone listening to this podcast actually to, within the week or whatever, is to really do a vulval self-check, because the earlier you do it, the better you have a chance of, I guess, seeing what your vulva really looks like, and then you're better placed to, I guess, know when something's changed, or, you know, when something different has occurred. So we recommend that you should do it once a month. And in between menstrual cycles, if you have sort of, or if you no longer menstruate, then it's kind of a good idea to choose a date in the month and stick to that date. And it's very easy. You actually only need two things to perform the examination. And I would say as well, I think in New Zealand we call it vulval, but I think in the UK you guys call it vulva. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So I am saying vulval, and people are like, it's vulva. It's we do it different. We're different over here. So yeah, I think the US calls it vulval as well, or maybe it's just us. I don't know. But yeah, I guess the only two things to keep in mind is go somewhere maybe that you won't be interrupted, and that you will need a mirror. And probably five to 10 minutes maximum of your time. So what you need to do is you stand, or to be honest, the best way to do it is to squat over the mirror. And you want to have a handheld little mirror that you can actually, what's the word? twist around. I can't think of the word. My God, that you can actually maneuver. That's the word. Maneuver around so that you can see in different places. Because there are places that you check that you might not think that you have to check, but I'll get to that in a second. And you can always ask if you've got a partner who's who's keen, and you could also get him or her to help you out. And that's also a good way of educating someone else as well. So the first thing that you do is you check the pubic mound, so where the pubic hair grows. And we would say to look for even moles. So look for moles, spots, rashes, lesions, bumps, those kind of things. Anything that you would think that's not sort of normal, I guess, skin texture. And then you would check the labia majora, so the inner of that and the outer, and feel also for any bumps. It's a good idea to actually have a squeeze and feel that if there's any lumps or anything with inside that that area of flesh. And then you repeat that with your labia minora, so the inner smaller lips. And then the last thing, which when I first learned this, this is somewhere I would have never checked, is the perineum. So the space between the vagina and the anus. And again, the same thing. So any rashes, lumps, or anything you think probably could look a little bit out of place. And if there's not, amazing. And that means also that next time, if there is something, you'll definitely have now noticed that that change has occurred. Or if the first time you do it, it's definitely a good idea to book in with your GP. I'm not sure if you guys call it GP, so your doctor or gynecologist. And sort of let them check it out as well, because with any kind of gynae health issue, the better chance of surviving or better outcomes are to get onto things early rather than later, and to always remember that and do it for yourself and for your family and your friends to make sure that you're here in the future by acting quickly upon any changes to your body is what we would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so, well, you firstly, your self-check, like guidance is amazing, because all the areas that you talk about, I mean, what the kind of thing that came out for me is that, you know, the whole vulva is skin. So anything that can happen to your skin, like moles and stuff, you can get there. So, it's between your legs, and it's not somewhere you tend to look, especially if there's pubic hair. So actually looking for moles is really, really important.
Definitely.
And then
I actually forgot to say to check under the clitoral hood as well, to check around that area as well, because you can get vulval cancer can happen anywhere within that, in the vulva. So all those components that make it up.
Yeah. And I guess like checking between menstrual cycles, as you said, is a good reminder to do it. You know, you've had your period and you're like, okay, I'll check my vulva now.
I mean, you've been down there all week, so you may as well do something else.
I like the idea of
getting a partner to do it as well.
I think there's something quite intimate about it as well.
Yeah, there is. It's actually kind of a good way to maybe perhaps build intimacy as well, perhaps with a new partner,
definitely, because again, it's that communication of this is where this place is, you know, this is where the clitoris is, this is, and also talking about your preferences as well.
Exactly. And also, if there was something that you found, I think you're more likely to be pushed to go and get it checked by a partner than if they didn't know.
Definitely.
And you're like, get there now.
And just having that support as well, because it is scary. I guess like that's another thing. It's, you know, if you do find something, it's a scary moment, and
it is
hard to support you.
I used to be terrified to check my breasts. I used to be scared to a breast check. Like, I was like, no, I can't do it. I was just petrified I would find something. But I definitely aren't anymore. Post all my own health battles, I'm just like, yep, I just check everything.
I guess it's the same with smears as well. You know, women come and they say, you know, like, oh, I'm really worried about getting my smear because I don't want to know if something's wrong. But actually, that as you said, knowledge is power, and the earlier that we find these things, the better, because, you know, that we do have treatment.
Yeah. And talking about that, good for bringing that up, because actually cervical cancer is the most preventable cancer out of any cancer in the world. Like, I know at the moment, like, the World Health Organization, loads of countries around the world are doing this big push to actually try eliminate cervical cancer. They think it could be one of the first cancer to actually just be eliminated. So getting your cervical smear is so important, because if they do find something, the majority of time they can get rid of those precancerous cells and you're good to go. Like,
yeah.
It's a shame for anyone to be diagnosed and die of cervical cancer, because it's just so preventable.
Yeah.
From happening in the first place. Like, we've got so many good strategies now to keep it at bay. So yeah, never skip your cervical screening test. It's like, yeah, book it, and then book in something cute, like get your nails done or like some fun hair after as a treat.
Yeah. Oh, I actually love that tip. That's a good one.
It's an excuse to treat yourself.
I know, we love that.
We love that. We love that. Of course I needed a new dress. Of course I needed a new pair of shoes. Like, I got my smear.
I need a reward. And I guess similar to cervical cancer, there's precancerous changes in vulval cancer as well. So, you know, if you do find something, it might be that you found it early, and that's something that could have turned into something a lot worse and scarier. So going and getting it and seen too is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. I mean, things can change quickly if things are sort of early stage cancer, it can change quickly. So the earlier you get it onto it, the better chance of survival, and probably the less intense your treatment will end up being. So yeah, just go for it on any changes, I say.
Definitely.
Yeah, and always push for answers if you're kind of brushed off with anything. Go see another doctor, get a second opinion, because it's your body, and you know the changes, and you know if something feels different, you know if it looks different. So trust your gut, basically.
I love that. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I guess that's why, you know, I'm doing this whole series, is that I want women and people with vulvas and people with any kind of female reproductive organs to feel that they have the knowledge to go to their GP and say, this isn't right, this needs, you know, we need answers, as you said, or I need treatment, or I need a smear, or whatever. So it's that empowerment that allows you to then go to a healthcare provider and
absolutely
ask for what you want.
Yeah, I think it's so important that you're doing this, because yeah, I think I know myself, like, I had ovarian cancer, I got diagnosed in 2017, I'm all clear now, but if my GP hadn't sort of pushed me, the hospital turned me away, but he was like, no, he was going away with his own health issues, and he was like, I'm going to be away, but if you feel weird on the weekend, go to the hospital. And I did. I ended up going to the hospital. They discharged me again. I went again. I was like, something's wrong. The third time I just burst into tears, and I was like, I know there's something wrong, and had an MRI, and boom, about 4 weeks later, I was having surgery cut up from my vagina to like my whole abdomen, and then ovarian cancer, and then another major surgery, and then 6 months chemo, and blah blah blah. But literally I wouldn't have turned up at that hospital if someone hadn't given me the kind of confidence or you know to do that. And that was just one conversation. So I just think every bit of conversation and sharing knowledge, you never know whose life it could save. And even if one life affects many other people, so it's a huge achievement of anything. It's important for everyone to share their learning.
I agree, and thank you for sharing your story. It's, you know, really, gosh, it must have been so scary.
It was so terrifying. Oh my freaking god. It was just that life flash before your eyes kind of thing. And because when I heard ovarian cancer, of course, the first blooming thing I did was Google it, like anyone would. Oh, and you don't want to Google it. No. It's terrifying to Google. Like 85% of people diagnosed with ovarian cancer are diagnosed in the later stages of disease, you know, and survival and treatment options are very slim. So as soon as I heard that, I was just like, I'm gone. Like, this is it. But post my second surgery and post the biopsies, which, you know, I had to wait for ages for, I ended up being stage one. So I'm in the 15% of women worldwide who get caught at stage one, which is like a freaking miracle. So like, I still like, I still kind of feel disbelief by it, because so many people that I connect with through TalkPeak's charity community are diagnosed late, you know, and it freaking sucks. And I just know how lucky I am, but I'm also so passionate about making change so that others can be like me and be diagnosed early and not have these terrible outcomes that majority of people diagnosed do. Which is a lot of to say about women's health, you know. It's long been under researched and underfunded, and we're just way behind the game on so many things. It's going to take time and money, but I think those changes are starting to come. We just need lots of people to keep talking about ovaries and supporting gynecological charities.
Massively. And well, firstly, I think it's so inspiring and beautiful that you were able to turn a not pleasant scenario into something so inspiring. That's kudos to you and your personality. But I guess this is a good time to talk about you and to talk about TalkPeak. Yeah. Why don't you give us a bit of an overview?
A rundown.
Yeah.
I guess, well, for me, when I got diagnosed, I was handed a slip of paper, and it was just a tiny little piece of paper, and it was actually a British charity, if you need some info, look at this website, and that was it. And I was just like, oh my God, is this, like, that's kind of when I knew, shit, there's not going to be much support for, like, me with this cancer type. And I was like, but one, like, in New Zealand, one woman dies every 48 hours from it. And I was just like, well, there must be so many other people with it. Like, where is everyone? And there just wasn't a charity. There wasn't an active gynecological cancer charity. And when I talk about gynecological cancer, that's, for listeners that might not know, it's cervical, uterine, or womb, as you call it in the UK, vaginal, vulval, and ovarian. So those five cancers. I just connected with a lot of people through social media around the world who are also diagnosed. And that was so, I mean, I actually wouldn't have got through treatment with my mental health still intact had I not found those communities of people. And I had Faye, who's in the UK, and we were diagnosed pretty much the same time. We'd have our chemo cycles on the same day. Yeah. And so we'd be like, how are you? And then I had girls in the US. There was three of us actually that all had chemo on the same day, which was bizarre. It was always like every third Friday we'd all go, and we all were in different time zones, but then we'd be super like on steroids and not be able to sleep in the middle of the night and just like messaging each other. And it was really, really powerful. But and then once I finished all my treatment, I mean, it took about a year, my two surgeries and then 6 months of chemo. And while I was doing that, I guess I lost all my hair, and then I started talking for another charity. They asked me to come and speak. It's called Look Good, Feel Better. And it's like a charity where if you're going through cancer, you can go and they do a day of like pampering and do makeup and everything. And they were like, oh, could you do some public speaking for us? And I was like, yes, but only if I can talk about and raise awareness on ovarian cancer. Because to be honest, I'd never even freaking heard of ovarian cancer before I got it. And neither had my family, you know. And it was like, well, that's pretty crazy considering we lose so many people every year to it. And it's the deadliest of female cancers worldwide. And so I did that. And then once when my treatment was over, it was just like, shit, I've learned so much and I've connected with so many people. Maybe it was a touch of survivor's guilt as well, you know, and it was just, I actually need to do something with all this, and I don't want someone else to get diagnosed like I did and just feel like there was nothing, like no support and no charity. Just the comfort that there's a group out there trying to make change or offering support or a place where you can at least email and be like, could you connect me with someone in my area who's going through it? You know, all of those things that you really need to get through. I mean, you have to get through a community. That's how you get through life, you know? Yeah. And so that's what I did. And Talk Peach, I've called it Talk Peach. That was the very first name that came to mind. Peach is the color of womb cancer or uterine cancer for the ribbon, you know, the cancer ribbons. Yeah. And I did have a dual diagnosis of ovarian and uterine. So I chose that because I do love the color peach, and I guess peach has connotations perhaps with the vulva, and I don't know, it just seemed to work. And Talk, because I just wanted everyone to start talking about gynecological cancers. We started up in May of 2019, it's been quite a fast growth for, which I didn't really expect, but on the other hand, I kind of did, because I am very passionate, I work really hard, and I think I have driven so hard to get it going. But now we offer meals to anyone diagnosed across the whole of the country. We fund physiotherapy rehabilitation for anyone diagnosed across the country. We talk across all district health boards across the country, at community events, corporate office talks. We've got an educational website. We've just put out the very first ovarian cancer guide, which is going across to all gynae cancer wards in the hospitals across the country. I don't even know, the list goes on and on. We've been on all the TV shows, all the radio shows, all the podcasts. It's been awesome, just the amount of information and education that we've actually been able to sort of get out there. It's amazing. And massive billboards, like whole buildings high, talking about gynae health. I do feel it's definitely a way to, I guess, celebrate the fact that I'm still here and feel like I'm giving back. I don't know. I can't stop. I'm too passionate about it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, first off, you're just absolutely incredible. I mean, to take such a diagnosis that you hadn't even heard of before you were diagnosed, no. And to turn it into this like massive, you know, you're like the New Zealand's leading gynae charity, absolutely incredible.
And like to think so, yeah.
I love it, because I always think that gynae health is just like not sexy at all. Well, in the media, it's just not sexy. Like, everyone's like, oh gosh, stop talking about
it.
I always get it all the time when I'm like talking about, you know, vulvas and uteruses.
It's very clinical, isn't it? Yeah. And I think that was definitely the thing. Like, I was like, I don't want to have a boring looking, because I was like, how do I get people to engage with about gynae cancer? Like, no one wants to know about cancer. So I was like, I have to make it bold. I have to make it I just needed to make it so that people would want to engage with it, which I think we've done good. I didn't want it to be clinical and boring. I wanted it to be interesting and have people feel an interest to get to know what their body is and feel empowered.
I think you've smashed it. I mean, when I first started following you on Instagram, I thought Talk Peach was like, you know, the connotations of like peach being bums. And I was like, oh, this will be exciting. And your content's so fun. It's like, it makes gynae health like sexy again, which is class.
Yeah, definitely. We try to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek, a good mix of facts and fun.
yeah, which I think is so important, because, you know, as we said, it's not the most sexiest thing in society, and actually it should be. It's empowering to know your body, and it's empowering to be in tune with your healthcare, and especially our bodies. They're so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had the manager of the communications team for our Ministry of Health get in contact, because they're just like, you're actually doing such an amazing job of getting this information out there. Wow. Yeah, which was really awesome. So hopefully we'll do some more work with them soon. But yeah, I was just like, it can't be stale and boring. It has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be fun. And you've got to get people engaged. You've got to hook people in and get them engaged.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Because it's almost like it's respectful to women as well, you know, saying that, we know that you need to know about your gynae health, but actually we're going to do it in a way that is going to be fun for you, that you're going to actually enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's cool now. So I do talks, and they're quite, we do, like, I'll start it off, we'll do a quiz in little teams, and we can do prizes, and then we just do a big talk. I just like to get people, like, really enthused about gynae health, and also, you know, let them know the facts that actually are quite shocking. We want people to know about, you know, as much as everything does seem positive talk peach, on the other side there's so much work to do in the gynae health space, and to make change we really need the community to be backing gynae cancer charities. Like, across, there's three of us operating in New Zealand. Two of us are the five gynae cancers, and the other one is run by my friend Jane, which is called Cure Our Ovarian Cancer, and it's for a rare subtype of ovarian cancer that mainly affects younger women. Mm-hmm. And so between the three of us, I think, you know, over a whole year, made, I think, $200,000, which is about, I don't know, probably £70,000. You know, it's not much. And then you look at breast cancer, and just in their 1 month of fundraising, they raised $8 million, you know? And it's just like, well, gynae health needs money too. And, I take my hat off to breast cancer, and I think they've done an amazing job. Like, you've got in New Zealand now, you've got a 92% chance of survival if you've found it detected by feeling a lump, or 75% chance survival if it's found through an ultrasound. And that's amazing. That's done through communities backing it and trying to make change. And they definitely still need to keep funding, because it would be amazing if breast cancer got to, like, even higher survival rates. Yeah. But I think that people need to support gynae cancers too.
Yeah. I love that, especially, you know, the ones that we don't talk about. I feel like ovarian cancer gets missed all the time, and
vulvar. It is. And the survival rate's only at 36% chance of survival. And it's hardly shifted since the 1970s. So it's in desperate need of funding so that research can be done. Because research is key to surviving.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And actually, next week in the podcast, we're going to talk about all the other gynae cancers.
Cool.
Because it's self-check. I wanted to talk about ones that we could check for, but I guess with ovarian cancer, it's all about knowing you're normal. Like as you said, I know something's wrong, like, please check me out.
Absolutely.
And it's feeling empowered to know you're normal, as we've said before as well. Having that knowledge to be like, I know that this is not right, and I'm trusting my gut, and I want treatment, or I want
intervention. Yeah, definitely. And know your family history as well. Mm-hmm. Check if someone out, any others in the family have had that type of cancer. That's also good to know, to arm yourself when you go to the doctor and they're like, everything's fine. And you're like, well, my auntie had ovarian cancer, my nana had ovarian cancer, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes those things do. But a good way is, you know, people can check out our website, www.talkpeach.org.nz, and it's got all the five gynae cancers, and it's got all the signs and symptoms for all of them. And we always say, do a 2-week rule. If you notice things that aren't the norm for you, and they've kind of continued, then that's the time to go and see your GP, and always write them down, because often you go and you forget something. And I always say as well, if you do think something's wrong, go look at those signs and symptoms and look through all the list of them and then write those down. Because sometimes you won't even know that that's a symptom and you go, oh, shit, actually, I do have that. I have had that. But you haven't thought that you've had it. Because it might have been happening a while and you've just kind of breezed that. You've kind of pushed that one symptom to the side and then a few others have come in and that's what sort of spurred you on. And then you forgot about the one that started a while ago. So, yeah, I think always write them down.
Definitely. That's great advice. And actually, you don't have to have every single symptom on the list.
But,
you know, if you have a few, go and see your GP. They'd rather see you than not see you. Definitely.
Yeah.
And it's come into my head, and I meant to mention it earlier, with vulval, well, just with vulval health in general, there could be a lot of STI manifestations, so sexually transmitted infections. That can manifest in your vulva. So even if it's not, you know, if you find something that's say like a lump or some kind of skin change, it's not necessarily that we need to jump to straight away being like, oh gosh, I've got cancer. It could be something that's sexually transmitted. And again, that needs treatment because you don't want to obviously spread it on to your partner or to other partners. So again, it's important to just go and speak to a healthcare provider and ask. You know, there's no stupid questions when it comes to gynae histories and gynae questions.
Yeah, definitely. And you always feel good if you get something checked out that you're worried about and you feel confident with the answer that's been given. You actually always feel good. You're like, okay, cool. I can just go on with my life now. A good thing to note though with ovarian cancer and is that so many people do end up visiting their doctor maybe 5 or 6 times before that is actually referred on to a specialist. So that's the one really main one I think to really be mindful of and to really push that those things are new to you, if they are new and that they are continuing and that it's not normal and that you want further investigation, because ovarian cancer is extremely an insidious cancer and the treatment for it is very intense and the outcomes for it extremely poor. So to have that diagnosed early is absolutely imperative to you basically living a long life. Sorry to end that on a down note, but you know that's coming from the horse's mouth, so
it's so important. I guess to end on a high, what is your vision for Top Peach in the future?
What is our vision? I feel like I'm so busy. I don't even know what the vision is. I guess the vision is that it's like our gynae awareness month will end up like breast cancer month, you know, where it's just like, and I don't want to be, you know, and I'm not talking about pink washing because I know there's a lot of people like pink wash this and pink wash it. But sometimes I actually feel a bit sad when I say that because I'm like, I'd love everything to be peach washed over gynae month, you know, but I would just love people to really be getting behind gynae month. So my vision is that the public know about it and get behind it and that more corporates are behind it. That's the vision, and we definitely do have corporates in behind us now, but I want it to be nationwide, and I want everyone out there raising money for gynae cancers and showing their support for all those that are diagnosed, because it makes a huge difference if you're diagnosed and you can see the country out there doing something, you know. It would just make things so much sort of more easier for you, and I think for your family as well, to know that there's people out there that actually care, because
hearing
is awesome.
And actually for your mental health as well, to know that people know about these cancers and want to actively make a difference. It's really beautiful.
It's really important.
Oh well, I would so get behind gynae cancer month. I'd be there with
woo. Peach, you won't miss it if you're on our trip. You'll see it every 5 seconds of me rabbiting on, probably. And actually, I don't talk much on our gram. I should more, but I'm just like,
it's really tough, isn't it?
It's charm, eh? I'm like, okay.
Well, I think okay. Instagram is amazing, and I think your story is so inspiring. I mean, I'm sure that everyone listening is like, oh my gosh, you're such an inspiring woman.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, and thank you for the amazing education that you've just given us on how to check your vulva. That was so in-depth and insightful, and I'm so grateful for it. Thank you. And it was lovely to like finally connect with you. I've been following your page for a while, so I'm a bit of a fangirl actually.
I love, you know, this is the great thing about social media, isn't it? You know, having really meaningful connections that's what I love about it. I find it so awesome. And the world is such a huge place, and then you just connect randomly, you know. Really, really cool.
It's the network, isn't it? It's like you said, when you find people who are also had the same diagnosis as you, it's just that network of people who get it.
Yeah, 100%. Because no one else gets it. And you're like, you get it. You know, like you need them because no one else. Your friends and family just, they can't understand it, you know? And also sometimes you want to vent to someone who's not your caregiver because you're already putting them under quite a lot of stress. So it's just nice to have that community there where you can have a rant and a moan and a talk about all sorts of stuff that's going on.
Absolutely. That's such a nice high to end on. Thank you so much, Tash, for your time and your expertise and for sharing your story. And I look forward to staying connected in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. And really, really appreciate it. It's been fun.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you.
Whoa, wasn't that amazing? I'm so inspired by Tash and her journey. I hope this episode has helped you to understand how to check your vulva and why it is important, as well as being incredibly inspired by the wonderful Tash. If you want to check out her charity, Talk Peach, I'd 100% recommend having a look at her amazing Instagram. If you're affected by any of the topics discussed in this podcast, please reach out to a friend or family member. If you need help, contact your local GP, who would happily discuss things through with you. As always, if you have any questions about anything that this episode has covered, please DM the Instagram or tag us in your stories. I will endeavour to answer your questions on the next episode. If you liked this episode, please let me know and share with your friends. And subscribe to Virago Voices on Spotify or Apple Music. Thank you. Bye.